With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hey, what up, listeners? Welcome to Rice, Asian Comedy Podcast. This is our second episode celebrating Asian Heritage Month. And on today's episode, we will be discussing Asian Heritage Month and our relationship to our Asian heritage. We will also be discussing the COVID-19 protests in both Ontario and Michigan. And we will also be talking about the newest international hit on Netflix titled Never Have I Ever, starring South Asians. So with us today, I've got Sam, Veronica, Gina, and Sebastian. Say hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi, everybody.
Cool. And at the end of the podcast, we'll have a little bit more time to go into your background details, give them a little bit of info about how to find you afterward. But for now, let's jump into the very first topic, which is Asian Heritage Month. And, you know, first question, what does Asian Heritage Month mean to you, if anything? And how does your Asian heritage play into your life? And I'll go first to Gina because she has such lovely nails.
Thanks. They actually don't look that good right now, but anyways. So Asian Heritage Month to me, honestly, it's pretty cool. It's a time, it's an opportunity for me to kind of be proud of where I come from and boast a little and tell people about it. So for me, my mom is from Singapore and my dad is from Sri Lanka. We speak Tamil at home. I'm a first generation Canadian, so my parents are immigrants. And what that means to me is just being proud of where I come from, being proud of my parents for working as hard as they did and coming to Canada and building the life that they did for us here. I just know I come from a line of very strong people. So that's basically what Asian Heritage Month means to me.
Okay, celebrating that's cool. That. And let's go to Veronica, Miss Sassy LaVie herself.
Ditto, Gina, ditto. Except being like Singapore and from Singapore. You know what? It's a larger sense of community being Filipino. I don't often get to have an opportunity to go around and be like, hey, I'm Filipino. I mean, that's not true. I could go around and shout it, but like it's a great time to have a month of that honors us, especially, I'm gonna say it, especially right now during this time. I mean,
and actually, you know, I have an interesting question for you, Veronica, because you do have a daughter. What's it like trying to teach her to be proud of her heritage? Do you incorporate, you know, because she's born here,
yeah,
as we know, kids, they just sort of pick up. So what does Asian heritage mean as far as like being a mom trying to pass it on?
Well, I do try and pass on my heritage. I'm very bad at it because I was born in Canada too. I will say though that during this during the self-isolation, all the toilet paper was gone. I taught her something Filipino. I taught her how to do tabo, which is you just wash yourself with water in a margarine tub.
So, in a margarine, I don't even know what a margarine tub. People,
I mean,
oh, like the tub that margarine comes in.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm passing
like a tub
on something
made of butter.
Yeah. But now she says she can't go to school and just use plain old toilet paper anymore.
Okay, cool. And one question I had for Gina was, so you're talking about being proud of your heritage, which is great, but name me one thing that you're not proud of. I'm going to put you on the spot. Something that nobody knows.
Like to do with Tamil people? Or
yeah, or just in general. Let's lighten up the mood. What was one quirky thing about your heritage?
Oh my gosh, that's hard. I feel like there's many different things that I can point to. I think the biggest thing here is about being brown and aunties. Like how much like aunties just get together and talk shit.
Yeah,
I think that's an Asian thing overall. That you know, is. Like. Our elders just like to sit in rooms and like talk about us.
Right.
And be like, okay, don't be like Gina, you know?
I would say so in my culture. So for the listeners who don't know, I'm part Laos, part Thai, and part Chinese. And one thing all of those have in common is, you know, we don't call them aunties, but we have a very similar thing. It's like our parents' friends. And they're allowed to be super observant about your life. And they are just so hardcore about it. Like they literally, like instead of calling my sisters their actual names, they called them the equivalent of like, if you translate it, it was like smart one, fat one, ugly one. Like that was literally, and it was just crazy. So I would say that that's one quote unquote quirky thing. But you know, otherwise like I'm super proud of my heritage, sometimes too much. I've been accused of being a yellow supremacist at times, so I definitely don't have trouble of accepting who I am, but you know, it is good to look at both sides too. Now, Sam, you, when we talk about your heritage, obviously there's your Asian heritage, but there's also your British heritage growing up there. So, you know, sort of talk about what does Asian heritage month mean to you?
Yeah, so I actually didn't know about the Asian Heritage Month before I came to Canada. So I was like, okay, let's see if it's Asian. And my biggest problem with North America is that they look at brown people and like, okay, you're not Asian. Like, no, we are Asian. So I loved it. So it's apparently it's the Asian and South Asian Heritage Month. And in 2019 in England, we have something called the South Asian Heritage Month. So that's in July. So, just a bit about my heritage. I am, like my parents are not Americans. So they are half and half. So like my dad's half Greek and half Indian and my mom's half English and half Indian. Mm. So I'm like, I am 50% mixed of the other people and then I'm 50% Indian and 50% brown. Mm. So yeah, so I think I like it. It's very interesting because in England, because of I think colonialism and the whole South Asian thing, it's not a huge thing, except you have lots of curry places and then places like BFI and all of those places, they just screen lots of Bollywood films. So I find it very interesting. Like you don't want to talk about anything other than Indian food and Bollywood. So that's my heritage, clearly, just Bollywood and butter chicken.
Well, you know, that's an interesting topic that you bring up about what does it mean to be Asian, who's considered Asian. I know, you know, Filipino community gets that a lot as well. A lot of South Asians get that. I will say whenever I post something on Facebook on, you know, looking for Asians, literally half the comments are, what does it mean to be Asian? Do I count? Does this count? Does that count? And it becomes like this big, like literally everything I post, I have to redefine what I mean by Asian. And so I always have to say it's geographically Asian. Whatever you see on the map that's Asian, that even includes Egypt, which is 98% Africa, but 2% in Asia. And we've had Egyptians on rice. So literally when we say Rice Asian Comedy Showcase, it is geographically Asian. Now, the one exception I will say is there is a part of Russia where Maria Sharapova comes from. And although they're technically Asian, if you're blonde hair, blue-eyed, and a millionaire, like Maria Sharapova, you may not be allowed on rice. That is one exception.
It'd be a good draw. might be worth like bending on this rule just a little bit, just for that.
No, I'll have Maria on my sports podcast instead. But bringing the question, I know I asked a question and then I answered it myself, but what does it mean to you this discussion? You know, we have numerous South Asians on here, but How has that affected your life? Do people actually question whether you're Asian? Do you feel a lot of racism from other Asians versus, like, say, white people?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and start just because I have a lot of experience working at a recreation center, and it was a rec center in Scarborough. So it's in a very Asian area. The recreation center's name is Asian Core, and often people refer to it as Asian Core. And I just remember working there and talking with my colleagues, and all of them were Chinese. And I remember being like, yeah, because we're Asian, right? And they'd be like, oh, what are you talking about? You're not Asian. And I'd have to like point out a map and be like, no, see, this is Asia, right? And this is where my mom comes from, and this is where my dad comes from. So this is why I'm Asian. So I don't know. I just think people hear the word Asian and they just have a picture of one type of person. They don't really realize that brown people are Asian too.
I think that's only in North America, because in England or in the whole of UK, if you say Asian, it includes us. So there's actually, when you have a census or a form and there's a box marked Asian, I am allowed to just check mark that box. I'm not allowed to do that in Canada. It's been a pain. Yes.
Interesting.
Oh, that's an interesting thing. I didn't realize that that there was a distinction that's different versus North America versus the rest of the world. Although it makes sense because North America doesn't even know what Indian is. So that makes sense that we're a little bit clueless, right? Like, clearly we've mislabeled other people Indian, and people still...
And let us be called Indians. Like, I am Indians. I'm from a country called India. So, like, please give me my country back.
Yeah. Okay, so and now over to you, Sebastian. What's your relationship with Asian Heritage Month? Like, Sam, had you ever heard of it? Because to be honest, until I started promoting rice, I'd never heard of it. But I knew if I hadn't heard of it, that I might be able to guilt trip some of the press to cover it, because there's nobody in the Canadian press who's going to be like, oh, I've never heard of it. They're going to be like, oh yeah, Asian Heritage Month, let's do a story on that. It's been very effective, but I literally had never heard of it. Generally for Asians, it's more about, you know, Chinese New Year. For me, I have like three separate New Years. I've got Chinese New Year, Thai New Year, Laos New Year, and then of course North American New Year, and those are more of the big occasions. But Asian Heritage Month, I'm down. I like to be celebrated all month long. Let's go.
Yeah.
So how about you, Sebastian?
So I actually hadn't heard about it until you told me about it. but I you know, I'm new to Toronto. I grew up in Michigan. And like, there are Asians in Michigan, but I wasn't anywhere near them. They kept me far from them, because my parents, my dad grew up in Toronto, but he moved just so I would grow up in a shithole, and then have to move back when I was an adult.
Wow. Yeah, that's a downgrade. Why did, if it's not too personal, why did he move to Michigan?
Oh, he was an engineer, and they like had cars.
And those
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
But yeah, I wasn't really raised with much Chinese culture, despite being half Chinese. I had a Ninian and Yaya on my dad's side, my grandparents, and I know what a pomelo is, but that's about as far as it goes.
What? I don't even know what a pomelo is.
It's like a big grapefruit that's bigger than a grapefruit and kind of more like an orange.
What?
Like the taste of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I probably know what it is. I probably do know what it is, because I've had like,
it's
bigger,
got real thick
oranges.
Skin. Super thick skin.
I probably know it by like a different name, like the Thai name or the Laos name or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do remember eating giant citrus that was less flavorful.
Yeah, it's not that good.
Bigger.
It's not that good.
That's a pomelo.
Oh, lychees too.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Probably my favorite part of the culture that I've received growing up is lychees.
Yes.
Or lychees. So good. You know?
Yeah, no, they are very good. They're very good.
Yeah.
Okay, so... very exciting. Let's talk about Never Have I Ever. And so Before, for those who don't know, Never Have I Ever is the hottest show on Netflix. It's trending number one all across the world, including Canada. And let me see if I can pop up the trailer. And this is my first time doing it, so if there's technical difficulties, let me know. And I'm just going to keep talking so there's no dead air, even though I'm not really saying anything important. And let me know if you can see the trailer on my screen.
What? Yes. Yes. Mom, I'm fast asleep! Yep.
You don't look like you're asleep.
What are you doing here?
I'm doing exactly what I said I'd do. I'm here to have sex with you.
Sophomore year is gonna be our year. You can feel it. But we're not cool.
Would a not cool person wear one dangly earring?
Which brings me to my plan. We're rebranding. I have chosen attainable yet status-enhancing people for each of us today.
Hey, Jonah. You smell great today.
It's Forever by Mariah Carey.
Oh. This is why you don't mess with me. See, I'm technically best there ever be. Yes, I'm blessed indeed. So don't test me, please. I am Hercules. I unleash the beast. You look like an Indian Kardashian.
I want to talk about a major event that could happen. Popping my cherry, dog.
Oh, Lord.
We are smart, and idiots are banging all the time. We can learn how to do it, too.
Word of advice, just give up.
Oh, yeah? I won't be able to walk again tomorrow because I'm about to go get railed. Peace out, virgin.
You just seem lost.
And I'm not lost. High school's a dick.
Are we allowed to say dick now?
I just want to be a normal teenager.
Whoa, what are you doing?
Don't worry, he won't hurt me.
Normal teenagers end up in prison. Or worse, working in Jersey Mike's. In a situation, just don't know
what to say. You're a weird girl.
Yes, I am. Here. Buckle up for some steamy teen romance.
Oh, shit.
Okay, did that actually work? Did it come up on your screen?
It
and
did.
Yes, it
yeah.
Did. It worked.
It was a success.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect, perfect. So that's actually the first time I saw the trailer. I just watched it today. I have been through about four episodes and have very strong feelings. I would say for everybody, give like your top two takeaways from the show. And anybody else... if somebody has a point that you want to like talk about, like definitely interject before they get to their next point. So if there's like a really interesting point, let's just dive into it deeper. And I feel like because it's a toss up between Sam and Gina, you both were really, really excited about this. I'm not sure who to go to first. So whoever cuts me off first can get started.
Okay, I'll do it. So I think one of my takeaways obviously has to be the lead, right? So Davey is played by a Tamil Canadian, which I think is so cool because like how amazing is that a Tamil Canadian is actually the lead of a show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that definitely has to be like my number one thing right there.
It would have been better if she was from Scarborough. Like just a tiny bit.
Well, she's from Mississauga. She's from Mississauga.
That's not the same.
Oh, it's an hour away.
If she was from Scarborough, I would have known her probably.
That's true.
From Mississauga, and either way, I still rate it. I think it's really cool that Mindy Kaling put out a casting call on Instagram, and then so many brown people were like, "Please pick me, pick me," and she ended up getting picked out of 15,000. Applicants, wow. So yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you wow. Get 15,000 applicants if you cast through Instagram. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That seems
but
like
I mean, there are a lot of brown people in this world. We multiply like rabbits.
Oh, you know billions what's funny? You know what's funny is I saw Mindy Kaling on the Lily Singh show because I was really watching that show because I was so happy that we had a late night host who wasn't a straight white guy named Jimmy. And I was
a lot of Jimmys.
There are. Sometimes they try and trick you by changing their name to James, but it's the same name, people.
It's the same name, yeah.
It is the same name. Sometimes they'll even go by Jay. They'll just really
Yeah, Stephen and John and then Even so crazy. Trevor Noah, that's two white guy names in a row.
Mm. Hey, that's clever. He's trying to trick people from afar.
That's how he gets picked for the job. The resume, the name on the resume.
You know? Oh, yeah. Two white names.
Mm-hmm. So I had actually seen Mindy Kaling on the Lily Singh show. I think it was during her debut week, talking about that search. And I think the search was still going on, so I don't know if they had found somebody yet. So I actually didn't put two and two together that this was the show that she's searching for. I had actually just heard about the search going. So that's amazing that the search happened and they found this actor who's now going to be internationally famous. She's trending.
I know.
Yeah, she is.
That's crazy. Yeah.
I know before Never Have I Ever came out, like maybe a month ago or something after she had been picked, I remember visiting her Instagram and then seeing that she got the blue check mark and she's verified. I'm like, oh, say word.
You knew from that moment.
I don't even know her, but I'm like, wow, good for you.
Right? Wow.
Camel pride.
This is like this show is a good like instance of how Asian media, like in Western society, is really opening up. Like I think it started maybe it started before Crazy Rich Asians, but maybe it started all the way back with like Slumdog Millionaire. But before that, people weren't really comfortable seeing Asian people unless they were like the clown, right?
Yeah, I have major issues with Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah, well, it's
not Asian. That's not gonna be South Asian. It's British. That's it.
It's not going to be perfect, okay? It's
No, it's not.
They don't like us.
It wasn't made by a brown person talking about the brown culture. They just picked up a book written by an Indian, and Danny Boyle decided to make a film on it. And it's a complete British film with British cast. So that's not Indian.
It's very common. It's very common for the Oscars to have white writers write about write about the minority experience and then to self-congratulate, they give them the Oscar. Like there was that movie with Sandra Bullock about the racism that won, what was it called?
Blindside?
No, it was like Crash.
Crash, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that was about black people in California, but it was written by like two white guys, so. You know, they just love to get into the brains of minorities and then give themselves awards. But, you know,
well, if it was written by minorities, would we get the awards, though?
No.
Just saying.
You know,
I have a different take on this.
Give ourselves awards.
Because I'm a filmmaker, and it's like, as a filmmaker, your identity has to be filmmaker first, minority second. Now, the problem with minority filmmakers is they are minority first and filmmakers afterwards. So if you look at the content they create, it's not good. That's the whole point. Like, Parasite was an amazing film and it did win the Oscars. So it's like, it's a weird balancing act. Like, just don't expect awards just because you're writing about your experience. Make it a great piece of art. Add in your experience, because a white person won't be able to change that or mix that up. And it's like, I think in Sex Education, that's another British show, you have Sindhuvi, who's an Indian comedian, playing an Indian mum, and then she had her own input in the scripts and the way things were happening. So that's my thing.
When you said Sex Education, I'm not gonna lie, I was like, where's she going with this? And then I was like, oh, she's talking about the show.
Yeah, I will say, you know, for the most part, I do agree with what you're saying, Sam. It definitely has to be good first. But I will say, as far as winning awards, I think there is pressure of, you know, it's not just about doing something good. It's about doing something good that's relatable to the awards voters. And if the awards voters are 95% old white guys, then, you know, that might push minority people to try and change their voice. Like, this is why, you know, I give some really strange advice to new comedians, which wouldn't make sense to, you know, to most new comedians, but I feel like to minority comedians, I would say, stop doing these open mics, stop doing the regular club scene, because if your audience is all like straight drunk white people, you're gonna change who you are to appeal to them, and then you lose who you are. So I would say I wouldn't even be chasing awards, because for me to win those awards, I would have to get into the mind of these awards voters. And until they fix those, the demographics of the voters, I don't really, you know, like if I won like an Asian Spirit Award, I'd be happy. But other than that, I'm not really looking for validation from like the existing. Now back to Gina, that was your first point.
Hey, you caught me.
I feel like, well, you know what? Well, we can go to Sam, because I think if we each give 2 points, we'll be here for 5 hours. So, Sam, you're very passionate about this. What are your 2 takeaways? Or I one my, takeaway?
Yeah. So my first takeaway has to be the production design. Like most of the times, if you see an Indian household depicted in Western media, you will have a photo of an Indian god. Doesn't matter if that person's a Muslim, a Hindu, or comes from any part of India. You just have a generic Indian god with 8 hands. So that's the most famous picture you'll always have. You'll have people wearing garish colors and just looking horrible. But this production design is actually very similar to how my mom decorated the house. Like till I started fighting with her, I'm like, stop using all of these colors. But it's like just these minor things which Indians can actually see. They'll be like, okay, this person is a Tambram. She's a Tamil Hindu person. So this is who she'll be worshipping. This is the way the food they were eating. So I just like randomly noticed that they're eating dosa. They won't eat the North Indian food which we eat. So just these minor details in production design actually just elevated the film for me. That's just an extra layer.
Is the blessing the textbook thing, is that real?
Yeah.
Sorry?
That's pretty cool.
Yes, that is real. Blessing the textbooks. Wow. So growing up, I was never allowed to put any books on the floor. Like if your books are on the floor, you're getting your ass whooped. Mm. Like that is not okay.
Oh, wow.
Us too, yeah, I would say.
If, God forbid, you step on a book or something like that, like even newspapers, you know how newspapers get tossed to your door? If you step on that, it's game over for you. You gotta you have to ask for forgiveness.
What if it's like a really shitty newspaper?
It's gonna sound, it doesn't matter. Any writing. Any writing. You do not mess around with knowledge, any written materials. Yeah.
Did you wrap up your textbooks? I covered my textbooks. Like in newspaper.
I wasn't extra about it. Yeah. We covered our couches and our remote control, but.
Yeah.
You had to actually use the textbook. You can't cover it.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty interesting point you're talking about the production design, because I guess they don't really think about that as much, but it's nice to know that, you know, it's actually genuine. I think, obviously, because it's coming from Mindy and she's got power, because sometimes it's not enough for somebody to be a minority creator with that perspective, because... You know, like say when Margaret Cho was young and she got her own show, she didn't really have creative control. So, you know, she was starring in it, but then it wasn't true to her culture. So it's great that Mindy has gotten to a point where she has that control and can make sure things are authentic. So that's good to hear that perspective.
That's why I love how powerful Mindy Kaling became, because when she first started, she started as a writer at SNL and then she got The Office. And even then she didn't have as much control. Like she recently came up and told people that she wasn't even credited or she wasn't sent out for an award for being a part of the writer's room in The Office. And then slowly she had Mindy Kaling, the Mindy Project, where she had whitewashed an Indian. So if you saw the Mindy Project, it wasn't as Indian as it could have been. So now with this, you can see how much power she has in the industry to be able to do all of those things. And that's something which I don't like. Like if you're Indian, if you're a Chinese or from any non-white culture, why do you have to rise to a certain level of power to just show your culture properly? Like what's the problem?
So I hear what you're saying, but the biggest thing for me there is like on the Mindy Project, I know people often complain that it's not brown enough or it's whitewashed or, you know, not Indian enough, but she always does identify as Indian American in that show. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a very valid take. Like not every single Indian American person is out here like wearing saris or just being super Indian. That a lot of times, especially when you're born and raised in America, all you are is American. A lot of people only just identify as American. So I think it's a very valid story that she's telling in the Mindy Project.
The story is very valid. I was talking about the curve of the Indian representation she was doing. So it's like she had this much power, so she showed this much. And then she slowly sort of sensitized the audience. Okay, so now you see this Indian-American girl who has all these white people around her. She's talking about Reese Witherspoon and all of that. And now she has sensitized the audience enough that they will accept something like Never Have I Ever, where you have people talking in Indian accents, where you have so many Indian things happening without trying to explain it to a non-Indian community.
But she's
the arc of it.
Do you think she sensitized them? I don't think, because that almost makes it sound deliberate. I think it's just, you know, you don't have power in the beginning. She's just a writer, so there's nothing she could inject. But I'm sure.
So maybe the power sensitized people.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, mm-hmm. I think from Go, you obviously want to tell people who you are. And Heritage, this is it. Like, there's no representation. Mm-hmm. From getting on a stage, the one thing I'm going to say is, yo, everybody, I'm Filipino and I'm Veronica, whatever. And that's what I want to say from the beginning. Whether or not people let me express that, that's where it is.
Yeah.
So good for her. I mean, my daughter was thoroughly impressed with this girl power brown girl show. It's totally inappropriate for her. I have to explain sex thoroughly now. But like, that's why we're into it.
Yeah, but you don't think they went clearly enough into it when they said like, oh, I need to get railed out tonight?
She asked me about that. I left her in the other room watching it, and I'm scared about what I'm going to have to explain.
But
I'm addicted to it because it's got just enough.
So what was your takeaway? Was it the gratuity, or what's your main takeaway from the show? How have you binged the whole season, or you're halfway through?
No, I was just saying, I said, I don't know, I might be late to this recording because I can't stop watching Never Have I Ever, because it's good. Like, it's like a good show, and I've been stuck, you know, for this month and a half trying to watch shows that are, you know, sort of adult friendly because they're all animated. And I said, we're going to watch this. I like that. Like I said, it's very female friendly. It's very empowering for women, specifically women of color. And also I was like, this is the most diverse cast I've seen since Degrassi. And that guy, what's his name? The main Paxton?
Paxton, oh my god.
He's the Jake Ryan of 2020.
Oh, yeah, I had to Paxton. Google his age to be like, can I post after him?
Okay.
He's close to my age.
How old is he? I don't know.
He's 29. He just turned 29.
Just below my limit.
Close to my age. Yes.
So it's kind of interesting you're talking about Paxton, because I'm going to say something. Somewhat controversial. So my take on it was that, you know, I do like that two of the male romantic leads with Paxton and Steve are Asian men. And I think there's been, I'm not sure if you know, like the history of Hollywood, they purposely tried to desexualize Asian men so that women wouldn't be as attracted to Asian men. So it's been like this, it's not even like rumors, like there's like records of this. Like
it's pretty well known, I'd say. It's pretty well known.
So for me, I do like that they're objectifying Asian men, and they're even giving them some like other characteristics too. The one thing though that I don't like is, you know, so Paxton, the character he's playing, you know, like I'm assuming from the last name, he's like half Asian, half white, which
I
is like,
I thought he was white.
Well, see,
yeah.
At first, I thought he was just a white dude. Well, then he spoke in Japanese on a phone, and I was like, oh, okay.
Well, it wasn't just that. I guess because I watch everything with closed captioning because
if you get white enough, you learn Japanese. That's a thing.
That is true. Yeah, most Japanese girls would agree, as they spend half their lives fending off obnoxious white guys. But the thing is, for me, I was like, okay, so because I was watching with closed captioning, I assumed he was half Japanese the whole time because his last name kept popping up. Mm-hmm. So then I was like, did they cast 100% white guy to play half Asian? So then I look up this guy's IMDb and I was like, you know, somebody, if I'm wrong, then the internet will like roast me for this. But like, I'm looking up his name. It's like Ben Carter, like some super white thing. I just made up that name. That's why I just named a good thing. Okay. Off the mic. But I was like, did they really, this is my takeaway. I was like, okay, so you're finally objectifying Asian men. And to do that, you have to hire a white actor to play the Asian.
It's Darren Barnett.
Yeah. There you go.
So because I've been stalking him, he was cast as a white guy. And then Mindy Kaling heard him talking to the first AD in Japanese. And then she added the Yoshida in the end. She's like, oh my God, you're Japanese. You're part Japanese.
Yep. So I don't know the accuracy of this. Fucking popbuzz.com. but it says Darren Barnett is mixed race. He's Japanese American. And so.
Okay, good. I stand corrected.
You've been validated by a very dubious tabloid. So congratulations.
That would be crazy if she casted a guy to be half Japanese and then he wasn't at all Japanese.
But they did it with what's her face in that movie.
Scarlett Johansson. They've been doing it for actually speaking of casting with people. Well, first they need to apologize to Mindy Kaling. Sorry I ever doubted you. Thank you for representing.
I didn't doubt you, Mindy.
Actually.
Yeah, I didn't doubt you.
Yeah. I loved her. Like ever since ever since she had the Diwali episode in The Office, like yes. She knows what she's doing. She's forcing all of these people to pay attention to Diwali.
Yeah.
Like every white guy I've ever dated will talk about The Office and Diwali. Like, yep, you've seen The Office.
So like on the topic of like you mentioned like Scarlett Johansson and Seven, one thing I do want to like, a myth I want to dispel that, you know, people in Hollywood, obviously I'm starting to do more productions and stuff lately. And like, one thing people always say is like, oh, it's more they just hire people because of their star power. And that's why they're not hiring minorities. So they're not a box office draw. And the one example I'm going to give that will break this is go watch a film from the 80s called The Chosen One, where it's about a little Chinese kid that they...
Oh, I remember that.
Had a white kid play him, and you can't tell me that little white kid had box office draw, or, you know, The Last Airbender. So it's not even just Scarlett Johansson. Fine, you could say Scarlett Johansson's going to make you more money, but you can't tell me some unknown white baby that you shave his head and paint yellow is going to bring you a box office draw. Come on, now, people.
There's also like the trope of like the white man goes and takes the Asian secrets and then he's better than them. Once he has them, like there's
the last samurai.
I was thinking more like that too, but I was thinking more like Karate Kid.
Oh yes, that's true.
You know, once you give a white man the secret of wax on, wax off.
Yeah,
no Asian man can stand it. That was the only thing we had going for us, man. We had nothing else. Mr. Miyagi sold us down the fucking river.
That is true. That is true. Although, you know, I didn't mind the Karate Kid remake because I'm totally cool sharing our secrets with black people. Will Smith's son.
He could do.
I don't like sharing secrets with like multimillionaires though. I think they can find them out the hard way. Actors who were born rich, no sympathy.
Hey, Jaden Smith bottled up water. Come on, he has.
He did do that. I'm not against that.
Okay, so Sebastian, what was your takeaway? Since mine was totally wrong, and my takeaway was accusing Mindy Kaling of doing something she didn't do. Your takeaway is bound to be better than that.
I thought it was pretty good. I only watched a couple episodes though, because I only learned about it today from you. No, it was good. There was a little bit of elements of like, oh no, how are us poor ugly nerds gonna handle life? And then it's like they're like very pretty people.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you poor thing.
But that's TV so like 100% of the time.
I know
like,
that's
oh yeah, these nerds, I, and then I they let down their hair.
Yeah. Like, look, I don't know,
and like, I don't know, like Mean Girls, you had like a bigger guy playing the sidekick man in the nerd group. I don't know. I hesitated to bring this up, but because it's so.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, classic gay best friend, second only to black best friend.
Definitely, like they're the only pretty people tropes on this entire TV show. They hate the ugly. Yeah. Nobody fat allowed.
I think that's the world of films in general. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's usually things, like
if you're ugly, you don't have a camera presence, quote unquote.
So. There's okay, like roles for fat people. Like you can be skinny or really really fat, but they don't have any really really fat. Cause so yeah. I don't support this because it doesn't have the fat.
You mean in like teen movies specifically, or
yeah, and like in roles, those are the two body archetypes you can have.
Yeah. It's very comically large. So there's this actor called Beanie Feldstein. So if you've seen her films, so she does a lot about a girl who's a size 8 or a 10, which is a normal North American size, and she's just living a normal life. Her life is not dictated by losing her weight and trying to appease other people. Like, she's like, this is my size, this is an average American size, and this is what I'm going to do. So her name's Beanie Feldstein. So you can watch her films. It's a slow change from skinny love girls to normal looking people.
Mm. Oh, you know what? I did have another point about the objectification of Asian men, which I'm all for. But they were so, I like what's happening because they were starting to diversify casts of like high school movies, and they would always put in an Asian guy, but they always made him the bully. Like, think Riverdale, he was the bully. That Suicide thing on Netflix, the 13 Reasons Why.
The same actor.
What a shitty fucking series. So,
he was the bully, you know. Spider-Man, the Asian kid, was the bully. I was like, can we, like, okay, I thank you for the representation, but can we, like, go from, like, geeky Asian to now we're the one who beats everybody up? Like, can we just just stop for a minute?
So, like, are you so against it that you wouldn't take the role, or are you like a little against it but you would take the work
if offered? Well, okay, so as I told you, I'm quite told that I'm racist against white people. I'm called a yellow supremacist, so I think being able to like out my anger and bully white people on screen would be quite helpful. So I have like a lot of internalized rage.
Very good.
Yeah. Now, for those people listening, this is from a lifetime of systemic oppression, so I'm allowed to have rage. So yes. Go ahead and throw me your comments. I do realize.
And let us all come together and perpetrate the cycle of hate.
Yes. Yes. Fight fire with fire. That's how you put it out. Forget this water nonsense.
Eventually, the house burns down and there's no more fire. And that's the plan.
There you go. Then nobody's white because we're all burned. Okay. We're so getting canceled.
What were we talking about?
And it's
never have I ever.
Oh, right. The team series.
We're going to get a letter from the burn unit.
They're
joking around about this shit. They're like, look at us.
How dare you make fun of fires? They're serious business. There's nothing fires funny aren't about a funny. Fire.
You see what that Paxton kid
make fun
started
of those fucking races all you want, but don't use mention of fire in my presence.
Fire safety is a very important thing. You respect it's not a fires joke.
And firemen.
Oh.
Ooh, yes.
And fire women.
Yeah.
Fire people. Oh.
You know, the thing you know, a lot of people buy these like these sexy calendars, but what I really like is the numbers. Like I feel like that's my favorite part. Like they got the sexy people up top, but it's like, oh, the font on this calendar.
Okay, so there is one thing I do want to talk about Mindy Kaling, and I love her as a creator. But one thing that I've noticed in her projects is the way she writes. And I'm not sure if this is just her worldview, but I find, and maybe it's me, but I find her lead characters don't have enough redeeming qualities. Like, so now I'm only halfway through this, and I sort of stopped halfway through the first season of the Mindy Experiment or the Mindy Project. because I sort of found the same thing. Halfway through, I started cheering against the main character. I cheered against her in the Mindy Project. I was starting to cheer. I was like, okay, so she's being really awful to her friends. She's just calling her mom a bitch. She's just, and you know, I get it. They're trying to say she's going through grief and everything. But I was like, you need to give me some nugget. Like, I even like movies. Like, to me, like, you know.
Okay, I have to say something. I relate so much. That moment, that's when I was like, okay, this show is what I expected it to be. Because I was watching it, and I'm like, you know, just like every other brown person, like, I was expecting so much from the show because it's, like, a first time, and I was so excited. Then the one it dropped, I was, like, binging it, and I'm just waiting for, like, all the parts I could relate to. And so I was watching episode after episode, and I was like, okay, all right, I understand what she's doing here, like, you know. But then once Davey looked at her mom and she was like, you're a fucking bitch, like, I wish you were the one who died, I was like, girl, I could relate, like, I could totally relate. Okay, this is, you're the people who
keeping
don't know
it real.
Are gonna be like, okay, you're the worst person in the world. But that's, I think it's a very, I've had a very difficult relationship with my mother, and I think it's like a brown girl thing, like,
for
you're,
sure.
You either have a difficult relationship with your mom or your dad. For me, it's been my mother, and so I've definitely been in that position where my mom and I have gotten into a yelling match, and we've definitely said a lot of things that we probably didn't mean, but it, like, you go through it, and then you learn, and you get better. So you seeing that, I feel like if you haven't had that experience with your mom, you're going to be like, whoa, this girl's crazy, like, what a bitch.
I think brown moms are very dramatic, because I remember when my ex proposed to me, and I said no, and I was in the kitchen with my mom, and I'm like, he proposed to me, and he's an investment banker, and he said no. My mom, she just turned, and she's half brown, so this is half the drama, so she just turns to look at me, took a plate, and just threw the plate at me. Like,
okay, so like, and like a frisbee? Like a frisbee or like a pie?
No.
Look, like a frisbee. And then 10 minutes later, we are
a frisbee, were you hospitalized? Table. Jesus.
No, I don't.
Point blank frisbee.
Yeah, oh, you don't. Oh. I don't.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were so quick on your feet.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, so she's throwing slippers at me. Plates. And then randomly when we are talking on the phone, and it just happened recently, like a couple of weeks ago, I was like, I did a comedy show, and before I could complete the sentence, she just started screaming at me. She's like, you're not supposed to go out, and you have this thing. I did an online comedy show, like, calm your tits, woman. So, and that's half the drama. So I can sort of relate to it. Like, it would be intense if it's a full brown mom.
Yeah, let me tell you, I've had ladles thrown at my head, pots, pans. My mom deadass cracked a spoon over my head top. Like, how is that? You know what I mean? Like, we, okay.
Wait. So like this or like this? And like, and like it, the reverb was so great that the head of the spoon just like wobbled.
Like a tuning fork.
Just like this, and then it cracked because it was plastic.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay.
No, totally. I guess we're violent people. Like, I think other people looking in would be like, oh my God, Kyle called like child services.
Is this
but
podcast
we are dramatic, but we don't mean it. It's a very real thing. Yeah. Like, brown people are very dramatic. So when she said, I wish you were dead, she didn't really mean it. And we could understand it. But if you're a non-brown person and you watch it, you're like, shit, what's this?
I feel like
I'm so happy you brought it up though, because I so wondered. I was like, I wonder how people who aren't brown, like, what they thought when they saw that, because to me it's so relatable. I'm like, this is like totally
my
normal.
English family used to be scandalized all the time. They're like, what's happening? They were so sad. Like, the Greek and English people, they were like, why did these two half brown people meet each other? Like, this is bad. Like, with my parents, so now they're just used to our family being very brown and Indian and dramatic. Like, okay, this is the Indian family, they will be dramatic, it's fine, just don't pay attention to us.
Yeah, I think it's also too, that's definitely a relationship you have as a female with your mother.
Yeah,
as a teenager.
Like,
as
a teenager's teenager, gonna do something like that. A teenager's going to do some shit like that. That's just par for the course.
I also, know what? Sorry, I was going to say go ahead, Paul.
I was going to say, you know, I totally get what you're saying. Those are characteristics, and I like flawed characters, and I like all the flaws that they put in her. Like, I like John McEnroe. I like Angered, and I like, I guess for me, I still just need that one thing. Within the first four episodes, I just can't take four episodes of her being so, like, she was so awful to her friends. Like, she wasn't
happy. She's a really bad person.
Yeah,
she wasn't happy for their happiness. She wasn't, she well,
like they mentioned it was all about her. She walked in with like a sociopath plan, like, here's who we're going after. That's who we're going to do it. This guy's gay, but I'm going to do him anyway.
For status.
Because that's what I want. I don't give a shit what he wants. I'm going to fuck that gay guy.
Yeah, I just needed one, give me one thing so I can hang on, so I can cheer for her. And for me, as soon as I start like wishing the worst for the main character, that's when I just stop watching. So I was like, well, now this is just making me miserable. Like, Mindy, I want to support. Just help me get through more than half of the season. Just give me one nugget. Like, let her, I don't know, surprise her mom with flowers. I know this is really cheesy. Just do something. Ew. Apologize to her friend.
I would have never been like, oh, mom, you're a bitch, and then brought her flowers. What?
I would, yeah.
Because you would have been in the grave.
I was going to say.
Bringing new flowers to your grave head.
I think it's like, it's really subtle, especially like in my family, it would have been really subtle. There's no way I would have shown any affection that way. It would have been really subtle, like, today I didn't sneak out of the house. Like, that's my apology. Exactly. You know what I mean?
It's, but I have to ask you, so if you got to the part where she's calling her mom a bitch, didn't you see the way the mother was treating her and like the conversation that she's had with the father during the flashbacks, saying like, I disown this girl, like, she's not my daughter, she's yours, that sort of stuff? How does that make you feel?
Oh, okay, see, I didn't get that far.
I didn't get that far. I was halfway
before, sorry. No,
yeah, she called her mother a bitch in episode 2. I know you're talking about like this whole thing about how she wished her mom was dead. That stuff didn't happen yet. It was just the first exchange.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so this was just like but actually to me is more how she treated her friends, and then her friends just sort of came back and they're so like apologetic, like, oh, I'm so sorry that I'm happy with this boyfriend that I hid from you. And then instead of her having a moment, she's just like, yeah, we're cool. And then that was it. And I was like, this is really, so it was more than just the mom thing. It was actually just a friends thing. I was just like, give me something.
I think it's a personality thing that you're talking about, because I could relate that like in the Mindy Project also, there are no redeeming qualities. When she plays Kelly Kapoor on The Office, again, it's the same thing. And I think that's a trap many modern writers like Lena Dunham also fall into. That you make a character and you try to make the character very real, and then that just person becomes very hateful because you don't create a well-rounded character. You're like, okay, this character is a real thing, so this is how they will react to it, without paying attention to how they've been reacting and how the audience has been slowly hating the character.
So my opinion on this comes from The Office, because originally when The Office was being made, Mindy Kaling wasn't a writer on it in the beginning. And so when she came on, a big change that she made for The Office was to make the main character more likable.
Was that her? Was she the one who made Michael less
She was the one who made Michael less, like, off. Like, honestly, season one, well, Michael was, like, atrocious.
Episode one and two, you're like, this guy would get fired in 1 second.
Yeah,
what is wrong
with this
guy? But he was copying Ricky Gervais. So.
Yeah, so she came in and her suggestion
it's like, it came
was,
across differently in the British Office.
Yeah, she definitely came in, and her suggestion was, you're making this very unlikable character. In order to make people, the audience, like this unlikable character or invest in him, is to give him heart. So that was a big change that happened with Michael, his character. So I find with Mindy, I do see that in The Mindy Project. I do see it in Never Have I Ever. And I think that's kind of her style of writing. Like, you kind of have to give her a chance and you have to get over that hump to see the character development and realize that, you know what? Yes, all of us have it in us to be these selfish, awful fucking people and make these horrible choices, but we come around and we learn from those and we try not to repeat the same mistakes. Yeah. So I think that's kind of her writing style based on everything that I've seen from her. And I am a big Mindy Kaling fan, so obviously I'm biased. But
I agree with Gina, but you know what, Mindy Kaling reminds me of, like, her character in The Mindy Project and even this show. There's, and I'm going to compare it to Bridget Jones, because that's the one I remember where she's a very flawed character. And I think for me, I think it's just this whole, like, I think that's a gender thing as well, because I feel like women are always sort of perfect. Like, there's these archetypes in shows and movies. So they're obviously trying to evolve from that. And I think that's what the flaw thing is. And then you're supposed to connect with that, and then you get to like the likability. So,
do you think this is like a bit of like an overcorrection, and then eventually we'll land to like the sweet spot?
Yeah. That's what I think.
I think it's gonna, the character is gonna be tried over and over again. I think like in this season, I've watched the entire season, so you definitely see character development, and you see her come around and work through her grievances. And you also have to keep in mind, this is a high school kid. So they're very dramatic. Like, I remember being in high school and thinking that everything revolved around me, and, you know, so it is realistic. I hope that in season two, we get to see more problems, and we get to see how this character figures this out. And I like the fact that it's more about personal growth rather than, it does come off as like, oh, it's only about boys, or I'm trying to get this boy, but really you do see a lot of personal growth. So it's nice. It's a nice change.
Cool. And on that note, I think that's a great way to wrap up our Never Have I Ever discussion. That was great. Very, very heated. Lots of opinions. I love it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just so happy that there's representation. And honestly, as you know, not a South Asian, but from like three other parts of Asia, like, to me, like, this is where I feel like it is one community, because for me, seeing a South Asian, I feel that like, pride, even though I'm not from South Asia, I do feel like, honestly, but it's funny because I felt the same pride watching Black Panther too. It's just sometimes you just want to see something different on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. I like, I don't even like to go watch movies as soon as they're released in movie theaters because I don't like big crowds, but Black Panther, I was there in line. Like, of course, when you see like people of color, Black, indigenous people, and they do big things, support that. It's amazing. It's so different. It's so nice to see that. It just, any sort of colorful representation, I'm all for it. So
yeah,
that's my takeaway. Growing up in the 90s and just seeing only white families on TV, it's boring. It gets boring after a while. I want to hear new stories, and I want to be able to relate to these stories. So it's a good change.
And Michael B. Jordan helps, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, he's pretty cool. Yeah. It's like, like over his like hang thing, but it's like a dread. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the protests. Both, you know, there's a lot of different angles to take. So as we all know with the news, there's been protests both in all across the US, but specifically in Michigan. And there's also been protests in Toronto. It's kind of interesting. There's a lot of different angles here. There's, you know, there's the whole cultural angle or the racial angle of, you know, being able to, you know, what the reaction is, what the media coverage is when it's all white people protesting something versus if it was a minority, whether it's indigenous, Muslim, Asian, anything, it'd be a very different reaction. And then I would also say the other takeaway as well is also Canada versus the US. You know, we do have protesters here, but it's a little bit different. You know, there's one is storming the Capitol with guns, and one is, you know, standing too close to each other. You know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of interesting. So what are your takes on this? There's a lot of angles. So let's go to Sebastian.
As someone from Michigan, this doesn't surprise me at all. Everyone's got to go. Like, I walked around for many, many years. I came from a no-gun household because they're Canadians. And then one day I asked one of my friends, what do you think about guns? And he's like, I got one right here. And he patted his pocket. And I'm like, holy shit, this guy's got a gun on him right now. Like, everybody's got guns. My parents have a house up in the hills, like a cottage. And everybody, like, people have Trump's name on, like, in huge letters on their barn, and they have firing ranges in their front. One of our neighbors has a firing range in their front yard, and one day they said, we're bringing grenades over, so don't come outside, because we're throwing grenades.
What the heck?
Pardon me?
So I'm thinking, like, maybe these protesters, like, they didn't intend to make an armed charge on the government building. They just happened to have their guns with them, because they always do. They're like waving, taking shots in the air. They're like, yeah, we got guns. Like, there's like, just like usual, right? Yeah. But now we're at the government building. That's the only difference.
But shouldn't it be concealed? If you're carrying it properly, isn't it supposed to be concealed?
Like, probably. But
so for them to take it out, they know they're doing something.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I'm being facetious here. Obviously, this was a thing. But, you know, they just have guns. They're like, hey, you want to go bowling? Yeah. You're going to bring the gun? Why'd you even ask? Of course.
Yeah. So it's an accessory.
We're gonna go protest. It's like, you're bringing the gun? Fuck yeah, I'm bringing the gun. What if they try to take away our rights when we go to try to protest the government? Well, it's like, bring the AK. Surely nothing bad will happen. We're white.
Because you're white.
Here's how the government works, and here's how the police work in the USA. If they're not white, shoot them on sight. That's the rule. They were white this time, so they got away. They're good.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of when the Black Panthers sort of did the same thing. Well, not quite the same thing, because it was for racial injustice. But they did bring guns to a protest in California. This is like way in the 60s. And immediately gun laws were changed.
I thought you meant like Black Panther Wakanda for a second. I'm like, when did they do that?
I know.
Oh, no.
That wasn't in the movie. Is that a deleted scene?
Yeah, but
history.
sorry, real life.
Yeah. So real life. Obviously, it gets a different response. Laws are immediately changed, and I think there was something that was said recently. I forget by whom. It might have been Chris Rock, because I feel like he's just says great things all the time. But I think he had a bit talking about like, if you want the gun laws change in America, just give more guns to Black people. Like that's.
Yeah.
Flat out. As soon as it goes to Black people, then they'll care and they'll immediately stop it.
Funny that he said that, but I really don't think the gun laws will ever change in America. They just won't. They're not up for debate over there. They're not playing with you guys. It's their right to bear arms.
Assault rifles were just banned in Canada though, and I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah. Well,
Canada's that's an interesting thing. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's very weird, like in America, when you try to have any amendment or something about gun laws, they just come up with such compelling argument, calling it their right as a free American citizen. And like, how do you argue or debate with stupid? Mm-hmm. And then they win by default because they are so stupid that no one else can argue with them. And like, you just need a very strong person to be like, you're just taking away all your guns.
So you got to be careful, because if you win the argument, they might shoot you.
Exactly. Yes, it's just so hard. Like in the UK, we took away all the guns, and now people just stab each other.
Yeah.
But you stab less people. It takes a long time to get good at stabbing.
Exactly. So we've had mass stabbings, and that's had like 12.
Mass stabbings?
Yep. Because you're not allowed to have guns in the UK.
But like,
so
it's very hard to have sympathy for like the 30th guy to get stabbed in a row. I'm not the first person to think this. This is someone else's thought.
Exactly. Like after 15, you can see a person running at you with a blood-soaked knife.
What if you're not fast? You're getting stabbed.
I think that guy gets stabbed first.
You don't have feet.
That guy's number one.
It's harder to kill a person with just one jab of the knife.
You can survive stabbing.
I actually know sympathy for people getting stabbed.
I've got some sympathy for people getting stabbed. I have sympathy for like 1 through 5.
Yeah.
And like it falls off. I have some for the remaining people, but it falls off from there.
What if if
you're in a wheelchair, you could be like 100%. Okay,
you're right. There are mitigating circumstances. Yeah. If this is in like an old folks home, I have sympathy for every one of them.
Yeah, that's
if this is in like a muscle rehab facility for people who are learning to walk again, completely like I feel bad for all of them.
Yeah, you know what's funny though is like, so we're talking about like guns versus knives now, but honestly, I feel like if you had a bunch of Asians or Muslims storming the Capitol, not even with guns but with knives, I'm pretty sure the army would be called.
Oh, for sure.
Well, I mean, like that sounds a little reasonable though. Like, why do they have knives?
Why do the people in why the UK why have they, knives?
You didn't have to have them be armed in this scenario. What are you planning, Bong? Bong, what are you planning?
It's the Second Amendment. This knife is loaded. I've put, you know, like Final Fantasy VII, they have those gun blades, right? Or no, Final Fantasy VIII. It's I can't carry a regular knife, so I'll just put a trigger on it.
What about like a rapier? Like, what if you've got a crowd of people with rapiers?
What if Edward Scissorhands was colored?
Oh, you know? Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, that's jail. Yes. That's jail. That's jail.
You know what I'm saying?
you can't do that.
Or like Freddy Krueger.
And so, you know, bringing it back to Canada for a moment. So obviously we've had our own protests here. It's a fairly small protest in comparison to what we usually get at Queen's Park, which for those not from Toronto, that's where the Ontario legislature is. Like literally, if you have less than 10,000 protesters, you're not going to get news coverage. This was like, you know, just a few hundred people, and it kind of got overblown. It's kind of interesting because Queen's Park basically
guns, right. Oh no, this is
no. This is the Canadian one.
Canada,
so
yeah.
I would
just
say
white people.
You know, it's interesting. I think this one's a little bit interesting take for me. Like the U.S. one had more of like a racial tinge because like guns and like there's just such inequality based on who is protesting. And obviously with the US, to me, I take the discussion more racial because of when indigenous people are protesting a pipeline or, you know, Colin Kaepernick is like taking a knee, they're called terrorists. And then people
call it RCMP.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's totally out of whack. But here I feel like my take on the Canadian anyway, and I think there's still a bit of a racial thing because I do think it is more white people that are going out with the coronavirus thing right now. But for me, it's actually more, why is it getting covered at all? Like Queen's Park literally has protests every 2 or 3 days, sometimes over 1,000 people. Literally, if you're less than 10,000, nobody's sending a camera crew. So this seems like a little bit of sensationalization. That's my opinion anyway on the Canadian one. But I did like the dichotomy of like in the US, it's like they're storming the Capitol with guns, and here my biggest worry about them is that they're not standing 5 feet apart. It's like you can bring your signs.
6 feet? 6 feet.
Six feet.
That 1 foot.
That 1 foot makes a huge difference. I was watching some of that protest on CP24, and then Ford gets on and he says, well, everyone has a freedom of speech. And I thought, yeah, because they're white. Because like you said, if it was someone else down there, he wouldn't be up there, you know, excusing them, so to speak.
I'm not going to lie. I feel like for the Canada side of things, I think that if it was a bunch of colored people doing this whole protest, it just wouldn't have even got camera coverage. Like, that's true, too. I don't even think mayors would not speak on it. The government would not speak on it. You wouldn't have any cameras on you. And it would just be that. And they'd be like, well, hopefully you all get COVID and die. Mm. Like, I think that's kind of...
So do you all think that they should be covered? Or that, like,
I don't,
we should have heard about them or not?
I think it's an over sensationalization of what's happening, because I think the percentages of people are so small. I do feel like you need to reach a certain threshold, because people protest the Ontario government a lot, like Queen's Park, because I live near there, so like I walk past there, like this one place I worked, I used to like go past there every day, so you just see every few days there's a few hundred people protesting, and unless it's 10,000. So for me, just like misrepresenting it. But I guess people are just looking for, I'm not sure if it's a racial thing. I feel like it's also,
I think it has to do with COVID. They just want like anything to do with COVID-19, the news will put it up there.
Yeah,
like,
that's what I was thinking.
The efficacy of like a few hundred people is also magnified because there's no one else around.
Yeah.
And it's also the news cycle. Like, you just don't have anything in the news cycle to talk about. You can criticize the British government and America, and then look at Justin Trudeau's hair, but then what else?
Well, you can look at his hair more than once.
But oh, yeah. I
wake up in the morning and I'm like, thank goodness
Justin Trudeau
is my prime minister. And not what Boris
would we
Johnson.
Do without it?
But it would have a different flavor.
Sorry?
I was going to say, but that coverage, it would leave a different impression had it been a bunch of people of color.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what would have been interesting is if we had organized like an all Chinese protest against people like attacking Chinese people. I wonder if that would have gotten covered because obviously right now people are attacking Chinese. Like it's just crazy. Like in San Francisco, somebody went up and stabbed a family, a Chinese family, including a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, and they got no coverage outside of like the Asian media. That's nobody. I was like, if somebody goes and stabs a blonde white girl who's 2 years old, it is international.
For a month. We'd hear about it for a month.
And like if San Francisco proper, like they're a wealthy family. So that seems weird.
Yeah.
But that's, a 2 year old and a 5 year old. Right?
Yeah.
That's the case with everything. Once
you don't,
colored,
you, don't
like...
have you don't have children in San Fran unless you're loaded.
That's true.
It's more like an economic thing, right? Like rich people get attention. And these people, they sound pretty rich to be having kids. I don't know. So I'm not saying.
I think it's just the whole racial undertones to it. So because after 9/11, many brown people did have lots of protests in New York. I don't know if any of you know about those protests and marches of solidarity for brown people, because you have the Sikhs in India who wear a turban and have a beard and they were being attacked. And then when brown people did protests and no one really covered them. Like, even now, it's very hard to be very open about wearing a turban and a beard. Like, after Osama was killed, again, attacks against Sikhs increased.
I think it's the way with any incident that happens. Like, black girls go missing all the time and nobody gives a shit. No one covers it. You know what I mean? But a white girl goes missing and it's like, oh my God, you know, let's get this girl home with her family. So that's just how it is in media.
Like
it's
they'll, use the mugshot.
I'm not saying that's the way it should be.
On the news.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like
that's
this person was known to police. If it's a white person, they were known to police. It's a mental illness. Like we see all the injustice in the media. Like I see it all the time. So I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Have you seen the four teenagers Google? The Google the four teenagers versus Google four black teenagers. Have you seen that thing?
No, I haven't, but I can imagine what it is.
Yeah.
So if you Google four teenagers or three teenagers, I've seen different variations. Then you see happy, smiling images. You know, they have their arms around each other. And then when you type in four black teenagers or three black teenagers, then it's mugshots.
Yeah, of course. Classic. Mm-hmm. Anytime a black person does anything in the media, they're like pulling up mugshots. Even if the person doesn't have a mugshot, they'll like make a mugshot somehow. I don't know how they do it. But they do it. They just, it's just like the norm. It's fucking awful. It's awful. But
it is.
Yeah. That's why I'm not surprised. Half the time I hear these things and I'm like, okay.
Yeah. You know, actually, so when, just to finish off our topic with the protesters, I do want to ask you, Gina, because you are a healthcare worker working in the front lines. And one thing is, you know, I feel like there's a lot of people, like most rational people, are sending their love and support to frontline workers. But how do the protests make you feel, knowing that you're going to work or your colleagues are going to work, risking your lives, trying to help people, and then you have like dumb protesters who are like kind of undermining all that good work and basically just like spitting in your face? I'm not putting words in your mouth, but like how does that make you feel as a... You know,
so my first thought when I think about these things is I wouldn't be much of a Canadian if I thought they shouldn't protest at all. I do think that people have the right to protest. They do have freedom of speech and they should. If you feel passionately for something, if you feel like your voice isn't being heard, speak. Make sure it's heard. Do what you need to do. However, as a healthcare provider, I look at that. I think about people congregating. Obviously, they're not practicing physical distancing, social distancing. And to me, it's just so upsetting because, you know, you see all these people with no regard for science and they're just out here for their cause, just to end the quarantine, to open up businesses again. But they're not thinking about it. They're thinking about financial issues rather than people dying. And I think, you know, we have, this is our time to come together as human beings. We're human beings. We should care for other human beings. You know, do your part. It's your responsibility to be a decent citizen, stay home, do what you can, and just stop, you know, flatten the curve, stop. There's, we already know how it works here. There's only so many hospital beds. There's only so many ventilators. Once all those hospital beds are occupied, once all the ventilators are occupied, what's going to happen? You think that people, the doctors are going to make decisions that favor your grandmother? No, because your grandmother has a higher chance of dying from COVID than the 30-year-old does. So we're going to try to save the 30-year-old, and we're not going to pay attention to the elderly people. And that's, it's real. That's a fact. Right. So we're trying not to get there, you know, stay home. Let's stop spreading this thing so that we can give our healthcare system a fighting chance.
Okay, someone
brought up the other side of that, like protesting, is that some people rely on these jobs that they want back. They rely on some kind of economy. So they're just so desperate that they've already. I get it.
You have a family to feed. I totally understand. But that's why there's so many different things in place. If this wasn't real, you know, you have to understand the reality of it. People are actually dying. The numbers are actually quite high. Although Canada has done a lot better than other countries, it's still people dying. That's wasted lives. If it was your loved one, you would feel differently. That's all I feel. I think we live in a society where people need to see something before they believe it, right? When it comes to mental health issues, they're like, oh, I don't see it. I don't believe it. A physical health issue. Oh, okay. I see it. I understand. I have empathy for you. Right? When I tell you, oh, racism still exists, and a white person looks at me and says, no, it doesn't, because I don't experience it, right? They don't see it, they don't feel it, they don't understand it. But when you have a loved one close to you die, or when you watch people dying every single day, your opinion will change on that. I can guarantee you that much.
What's happening around the world? So as a Canadian, we are very privileged. Your government, I should not say yours, but like the Canadian government is giving you so much money and benefit and things. Like in the UK, you don't have anything like that. Like our prime minister went around hugging and touching patients, went into the ICU, came back, and he's like, okay, so we'll start a lockdown from tomorrow. So today, go out and have your last Friday pub night. That. You don't have benefits. Yeah, and he's like, you have to be mentally prepared that 60% of you will die. That's the British Prime Minister saying things like that.
Well, has he come around any since?
Yeah, he started working back on Monday, and then he had a son. So he has a baby. He's completely fine.
Yeah.
And now he's like, we'll start reopening. And the whole British population is like, don't be a cunt, Boris. You don't need to reopen right now.
You know, I really do agree that Canada has been so great with all these benefits, especially because I also took my 1,200 Trump bucks. Thanks. I paid taxes last year. I deserve it. Even if I'm not living there again. But yeah, it's great. Like I don't have to, you know, risk catching COVID and then killing my my landlords, which is great. The immediacy, I may have to eventually, but not for now. We're totally good.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing here too, just sort of talking about Asians, like Asia, Canada, and the US, I think the interesting thing here is, and this is why I really like Crazy Rich Asians, because I felt like what they were attacking was the ideal of the pursuit of happiness and how that's like a selfish pursuit. It's basically putting, if the main goal in your life is to be individually happy, that doesn't really work. With, as we all know, as Asians, what's pounded into our head, community before person, like literally, you know, like let's just take, you know, a lot of countries like China, they put your family name first because your family name is more important than your individual name. So I'm definitely not surprised that in a country where the pursuit of happiness is put above all individual happiness, that people wouldn't be able to see, wait a minute, let's not have old people die. Let's save the economy and kill. Let's just kill people.
Yeah.
Plus it's like, it also won't save the economy because the closure will have to happen again. So that's also another thing.
I think at this point, they just have a false definition of American freedom and that we are free people. And that just translates to we are selfish. We want our gratification. We want our things. Mm-hmm. And that's all that matters.
Yeah. I also don't think that a lot of people have been through the struggle. Like, they don't understand. They just want to go outside. They just want that freedom so badly. But it's like, I grew up a little bit differently. Like, I'm used to eating Mr. Noodles if I have to. Like,
we're built on survival.
You know, so, like, even from, like, day one, the American people were founded upon, like, the freedom to force your will onto other people. Like, the Puritans, they only left Britain because they wanted to be able to force other people to be Puritans. And that's why the Pilgrims went to fucking America in the first place. And and then they continued by, you know, forcing everybody onto reservations, you know, and then.
And I feel like if you have a history of a strife or war or something, that always has been happening in our Asian countries. Like, we don't come from peaceful countries, even though we are still democracies and we are peaceful. We still have lots of things. Like, in India, you have the whole Hindu-Muslim thing. Then you have your the war in Vietnam, things happening in all parts of Asia. So we've come to respect our freedom and the privilege we get. We don't think that it is inherently our right, as opposed to America, where the last biggest war was, like, what was it, the Civil War. It's like, after the Civil War, they had 9/11, but then they've just been very peaceful and privileged. So now they think of the privilege as a right.
Yeah, like, definitely as far as wars happening in America, for sure. Yeah, they like to export their wars to other countries. Okay, so on that note, that very deep note, we're coming to the end, and I will get better at segues the more I do this. This is day number two of Asian Heritage Month. On that note, I do want to segue. I want to thank you all for coming onto the podcast. I think it is a great celebration of Asian Heritage Month, unity. Just looking at the faces in today's podcast, we represent quite a few different regions of Asia. Want to give our listeners a chance, if you could all, you know, within 30 seconds, sort of talk about what your next project is, where people can find you. Let's start with Veronica.
I don't have any projects coming up, although I've been thinking that I may. I still have my kind of late show going on. I have a bunch to edit. But otherwise, you can find me on Instagram, sassy_la_letter V. So Sassy La V.
Okay, great. And everybody's handles, if you guys send it to me in the group thread, I'll put it in the show notes and description, so everybody will be able to find you. Let's go to Gina.
So I don't really have any projects coming up because of COVID. So I actually had a big show, or my first show ever, that I was producing, and COVID came through and ruined it all. Oh. So I had to cancel it.
Oh, no.
And we were so close to being sold out too. So I was really excited. But it is what it is.
That was your birthday show, right?
Yeah. Wow. Well, I used my birthday to convince people to come. Duh. No, yeah, it is what it is. Obviously, it's disappointing, but sometimes you have to give up some things so that you could protect the community. So I'm all for a safer community. But if you want to follow me on Instagram, my handle's @GinaSiva, Twitter @GinaSiva, and pretty much just keep the name wherever, whatever social media platform is always GinaSiva. So
great. Yes. I will say Gina's next project is saving people's lives. So she'll be busy doing that. Next up, let's hear from Sebastian.
Hey, I'm Sebastian D. Chow. I'm currently making sketches on YouTube on the Sebastian D. Chow channel. You know, just a quick couple, like 2 minute sketches. They're funny videos that I've made out of this quarantine zone. You know, I make them all in a basement, which is also where I live, because I'm a little gremlin in the basement. It's fine though. It's fun. Because I make videos by myself in the basement. It's cool though.
He said in my basement so many times.
That's where it is. Oh, look over here. You can see luxurious basement. Over here, more basement. But yeah, that's what I'm doing right now. I'm making videos at Sebastian D. Chow and on YouTube.
Okay, great. Yeah, listeners, definitely check that out. I've watched Sebastian's first two videos. They're pretty funny for sure. And now let's end with Sam.
Yeah, so I'm a filmmaker who can't make films. So I've just started a film podcast. It's called the SP Film Podcast, where I just talk about films and just being judgmental about different films, because clearly I'm a very famous filmmaker. And I do have random online shows, because you can't go to open mics and you don't have in-person shows. So my Instagram is Samaira Black 13. That is Samaira Black 13. Just these two things that I'm doing.
Okay, great. Thanks again, everybody, for coming on to this podcast. We'll be posting it tonight. Our listeners will be hearing it tomorrow, on Sunday. And thank you to all the listeners for coming. During the month of May, this will be, as much as possible, a daily podcast. I will give a warning that I'm the type who jumps in too far and then doesn't deliver. So I say daily now, but we'll see if that lasts past Monday. I feel like I'll make it till Monday as a daily, but we'll see how far I get after that. Okay, thanks. Signing off. Have a great night.
Thanks, Fong.
Thanks for having us.
Bye. Bye. Bye.